Okay, so it's la deseamos.
Le deseamos.
Le das deseamos. A usted, a su familia.
A usted y a su familia.
A usted, familia, una feliz Navidad.
That's good.
Hi, I'm Bo Henderson, creative director here at Family Talk.
And I'm Efrain Garcia, senior designer.
And we want to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas.
Le deseamos a usted y a su familia una feliz Navidad.
And a blessed and happy New Year.
Y un próspero año nuevo.
Yeah, you're better at it.
Today on Family Talk.
How do you go through years of horrific abuse and years of a self-destructive lifestyle and come out shining with joy? Well, Julie Woodley shares the answer in her three-part conversation with psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson and guest host Dr. Meg Meeker on today's edition of Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh, and this month we are re-airing our highest-rated broadcast of the year in what we call the Best of the Best broadcast series. Julie's dramatic story is one of those powerful programs that inspired and encouraged so many of you because, despite her traumatic start in life, she has a message of hope today. It won't sound like it at first, but hang in there, and you'll see God's hand at work in her life. Now, before I get started, I want to mention that some of the things Julie shares are not suitable for the youngest ears, so you might want to distract them from this broadcast or listen to it later. And now, here's Dr. Dobson to introduce our guest on this Best of the Best broadcast edition of Family Talk.
Julie, welcome to
Thank you.
Family Talk.
Thank you.
When I was at Focus on the Family, we aired a speech that was given by you, didn't we?
Yes, you aired a talk that I had given at Northwestern College, and I really was talking in that talk about my story, but really how the college had brought me in and loved me and became like a family to me, and they really loved me.
You graduated from there, didn't you?
Well, I graduated with a bachelor's from Northwestern College, yes, and then went on to the seminary, which was close to their Bethel Seminary, yes. Uh-huh.
Well, let's go all the way back to your childhood. Mm-hmm. I'd really like you to kind of summarize, because there have been many twists and turns in your life. But I tell you, Julie, as I was saying just a few minutes ago, I can hardly believe that parents could put a child through what you experienced. Mm-hmm. And I ask you about your dad. He was responsible for some of it, but your mother also, right?
Well, my mother, yes, and, you know, just from the fact that she didn't protect me and she knew it was happening and she just allowed it, yes.
Well, what was it? How early did it start and what did you experience?
It started as young as I can remember. It started, you know, with physical abuse, beatings, verbal abuse, things like you're stupid, you're ugly, you'll never matter, you'll never amount to anything, and then it led to sexual abuse. And, you know, the earliest memories are quite young, before kindergarten, where my father would begin to sexually abuse me.
That is really hard. Was he a stepdad? I mean,
believe. That's a great question. What happened after he died a few years back was I did find out that he was my stepfather.
There it is. Oh.
And that my mother had had an affair with his brother, and I was the product of that affair.
Oh. Hmm.
Which, there's never excuse for sexual abuse, but it made more sense.
Yeah.
Why, you know,
at
why there
the
was so much.
The pieces began to fall into
right.
place.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I look back and, you know, I may never know exactly, but I know that God is my father, and God redeemed me, and God restored me, and he became my father in so many beautiful ways, my heavenly father.
How long did this abuse go on?
It went on my whole childhood and until I left home at 18. And the abuse got worse.
The sexual abuse went on for that long?
The sexual abuse went on that long.
Julie, I can't believe. I mean, I can, but it's just so tragic, it's hard to believe.
And it was very, very confusing, because that was the only way he ever showed me love, was to sexually abuse me. And so this little girl, you know, you get this craving in your heart to be loved, and that's your only
Absolutely.
Concept, which is very distorted, but that was my only concept of love.
Did you tell anybody?
I tried to tell, first of all, a priest was raised in the Catholic Church. And, of course, he had you know, my parents had a lot of money. So he had given a lot to the church. So the priest said, I don't really want to hear about it.
Did he not believe it?
I don't know. It didn't appear like he believed it. So I went to him, and then after that, I went to a school counselor. Well, I was raised in a little tiny town in the Rockies of Montana. Almost everybody in the town I was related to in mm-hmm. some way, shape, or form. And, you know, they owned a lot of money. They had houses. So they were very influential in the community. So I tried to tell the school counselor, well, she was my mother's friend, and she said, don't ever talk about this. And so there, you know, I felt like I had no voice. I felt like I was even afraid to let anybody know what was going on at my home.
Dr. Meeker, now the law would step in if they could find out about it and protect a child like that. But in those days,
they didn't.
She was on her own.
Exactly. And I think the thing that's remarkable, Julie, is that many young women and girls in your situation wouldn't even say anything, A, because they feel so much shame, and B, because they want to protect their family. They want to protect their father. And people have a hard time understanding that. Well, why would you want to protect a man who's abusing you? Mm-hmm. It's very complicated because kids still need their dad and they still want their dad, even though it's a very twisted relationship. Mm-hmm. So it's really remarkable that you were willing to say something. But you're right. If you had said anything now, I mean, if you were in school now and said something to a counselor, I think I would hope that they would report it immediately to Child Protective Services.
You know,
Jump on it.
A lot of these kids are threatened, too.
Yes, exactly.
Or manipulated. If you tell anybody, I'll kill you.
Well, and that's what he did. He said that many times. He was a hunter in the Rocky Mountains, and he had actually his guns outside of my bedroom, and he would threaten me if I told anybody. He would kill me. You know, he'd beat me up. If you tell anybody where, you know, the bruises are from, I'll kill you. So I learned to not look at anybody in the eye. I was like a scared rabbit that anybody would find out about the abuse.
You had a regular life and then a very secret life. A very secret. What was your father like? What was your relationship like during the day after school? Say, was there any semblance of normalcy or warmth in the relationship at all? Or not?
Mainly his relationship with me was that I worked a lot. I stacked the wood. I cleaned the dishes. I was, you know, I was just kind of a little workaholic that if I didn't do everything right, he would beat me up. So I guess my relationship was like I was petrified. I would stand at the window and just wonder what kind of a mood he was in. So I was afraid.
Did you cry a lot?
Only by myself.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't let anybody see my tears.
You talk about God's grace and what he's done for you. You sit here today as a normal, functioning human being, as a woman who has gone through unimaginable suffering, and yet the scars are not very apparent as we sit here and talk.
And, you know, when you say that, I just want to cry because God has healed everything. He has stepped in and loved me to the depths of who I am. And when I became a Christian, I just like my whole world blew up with love. And I just let him into the depths of who I was because that was my only survival. I was so desperate for God's love that that's all I knew.
Did your mother give you love?
Not really. My grandma did. My mother was in bed a lot. I think she had a lot of emotional issues. And she was trapped herself. He was out having affairs. And so she just...
So you weren't the only victim here.
No, he had a sex trafficking ring in the mountains of Montana.
My.
And so I was one of the little girls that was sold into trafficking in those mountains. So there was a lot of deception, chaos, and evil going on in that home.
I read that he would send you to a hotel and where there were arrangements that men would have access to you, and you were told you better make them happy.
Yep. I was told I was pulled out of the home and I was going to go babysit. Well, I never saw any kids. And so I was brought to this hotel, actually, that my uncle owned, but I don't know if my uncle was involved in any of it. But yes, I was taken to these men and I disappeared into those.
How old were you when that started?
That was probably around 14, maybe 15, for a couple years. Just a chaos and pain. And
well, what an incredible story. Did you ever tell a friend? Did you ever tell anybody? I mean, did you have no support from anywhere?
I had a friend that I would tell little things, but I was just afraid that if I tell anybody, it's gonna get out there. Mm-hmm. And of course, they would see when he would hit me, I would, you know, have bruises. And, you know, I was even afraid to tell them, you know, where the bruises were coming from.
Right.
Was there any pornography involved?
Oh, yes. This? Yes. There was pornography in there.
Always is.
Yeah. Always.
In the bedroom, you know, I know there was certain devices that I'd find, you know. So, yeah, there was just a multitude of sexual issues going on.
And what pedophiles use it for is to say, look, I want to show you something. Mm-hmm. This is what mommies and daddies do.
Exactly,
This is how daddies
show their daughters love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would your dad say that to you?
Yes. This is how daddies show their
daughters. This is how daddies show love
to you. This is how they show love. Mm-hmm. Which we just believe it when you're a little girl. Yeah.
Was there part of you, Julie, growing up that felt a little crazy? And I don't mean detached from reality, but I would imagine you would feel this experience is so awful. And then I go to school and I see other people and they're probably not living this. So where do I fit and who am I and how does this all work? I would imagine you were so confused as a teenager that you'd start to second guess your perceptions and feelings.
You know,
did
Meg,
that ever happen?
I would worry less about that than beginning to feel that it's normal. Think, oh, so this is what everybody else
does. This is the way life is.
I mainly felt like it was normal because that's all I knew. And that was my reality. And then, you know, when I got a little bit older, then he would bring my brother into the picture. You know, that if my brother had any sexual desires, he was to come into my bedroom, which he did. So to me, I know that sounds really crazy and distorted, but that was my normal.
Your brother did the same thing.
My brother began to be sexual with me.
Was he older or younger?
He was a year and a half older than I was, and my father was also beating my brother. And so there was a lot of violence in the home, and then my brother would come to me. So you're right, Dr. Dobson, it was it sounds crazy, but it was my normal.
Yeah.
And so I started to create a great question, by the way. I started to create kind of a fantasy world. My fantasy world was, after I did all the chores when I got home, I would take off on my horse, you know, because I was raised in the Rockies and I had a horse. His name was Chico. And that was my escape. That was the only escape I knew, was to go out on my horse and ride through the mountains and ride in the wildflowers and sleep in the wildflowers. And I believe that I look back, and even though back then I didn't know who God was there.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the way that God knew how to meet me in that place and to honestly keep me sane.
You know, I've mentioned on this program many times that I served on the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, and that was one of the toughest things that I've ever gone through. It was 18 months of, I don't often use the word hell, but it was pretty close to it, because we saw photographs, we heard testimony from people like you who had gone through this, and one of the worst statistics that I remember from that era is that pedophiles, if you take them as a group, abuse between 250 and 300 children in a lifetime.
Wow.
And the kids don't tell it. They don't ask for help.
Yes.
They do what you did. They try to cope. They try to go along, get along. And they don't very frequently don't run away. They just take it.
Yes, they take it, and I think you're right. I think many men and women that have been sexually abused take it to the grave.
Yeah.
And take that pain out in all different distorted ways and begin to hurt other people. And then you continue the cycle, which I did in all practical purposes. I became a prostitute in Minnesota. And so I continued the cycle of abuse, abusing myself, and continued that cycle for years until God came in and saved me in an amazing way. And then the cycle turned around, and the cycle became restoration and healing, and God did an incredible work quickly in my life.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing that while you were going through this, your Heavenly Father was mindful of it.
Yes.
He knew it. He saw it, mm-hmm. and he reached out to you.
Mm-hmm.
When you weren't looking for him, he was looking for you.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. With love that you're describing now as just being beyond description, really.
Well, it was beyond description, and how he met me. I actually left at 18 years old. I knew I had to get out of there. The violence was becoming so bad. And
what were you beaten for?
Whatever he was in the mood for.
You sounded like a good little girl who was cutting wood and doing whatever they told you to do.
Trying my best in every way. I remember on New Year's, I used to make a vow, if I'm perfect this year, I won't get beaten up.
Aww.
I just remember every year, I'm going to make that.
It tears at your heart. Yeah, it just tears at your heart. Julie, were there any periods in your growing up where you just sort of blanked out?
That's a great question. I think the part that forgot some of those memories was when he was selling me to the men.
Mm.
And it was only about 8 years ago, I was actually going to be speaking at a conference, and a woman calls me out of the blue. She found my cell phone number and said, you know, I just want you to know that I took over your father's job at this insurance agent, and I opened up the computer, and there's all these images of women that he had sold. And it's like, when she said that and began to say then, you know, you were one of the picture, you know, we knew what you looked like as a little girl, you were in this picture. It's like,
you're kidding.
And it was
your
like all the memories.
Your picture was in the album.
In the computer. He obviously didn't erase the files. So, but when she said that, it's like, whoosh, all these memories started coming up. And I was going to get up and speak at this conference, and I held it together until I made it through. But then it's like the memory started like flooding me, and it became quite overwhelming.
Mm.
And as I get stronger, and as the grace of God just keeps flooding me, you know, it's slowly coming back. But I can handle it now. Mm-hmm. I can handle it, and what I do is I just invite God's love. Every time something comes up, I just invite God's love, and he shatters it with joy.
Oh, my.
Is your father still alive?
No.
How about your mother and your brother?
She's still alive. They won't have anything to do with me because my story has become quite public, and they just honestly probably don't want to acknowledge, you know, what they did or take responsibility for that. So,
well, what your mother did in ignoring it was illegal.
Yep.
It was not only horribly sinful and evil, but somebody should have come to your rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody should have looked for Child Protective Services. They may not even have been Child Protective Services in those days.
Now, some of my relatives did come back to me years later and found me and said, we're so sorry. We were not there for you. We didn't know what to do. He was a very powerful man in the community. We just want you to know we believed you. We knew it was happening, but we just didn't know what to do.
You are in the business of helping women who have been through this.
Yes, it's my delight. Yes.
And that is your ministry.
Yes.
Now, you speak all over the country. Mm. And you've done video programs for people. Mm-hmm. You've really got quite an active ministry. Mm-hmm. And the Lord has not only healed you, but it has helped you get other people the healing that they need.
It is my love gift to be able to give back to these women and help them, and men as well.
Mm. And where does this work go on?
Well, my ministry is called Restoring the Heart, and I do films. I created a film called In the Wildflowers for women and now men that have been sexually abused.
Referring to when you would run out.
Yes, exactly. That was where I healed, in the wildflowers, yes. And so that work is around the country in counseling centers, churches, crisis pregnancy centers. They take women through their healing and also treatment centers after being sexually abused. And now we've rewritten the curriculum for men as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Julie, we got 1 minute left. Uh-huh. I want you to answer this question. Most people, well, let's say many people, mm-hmm. who have been through something similar to what you've gone through are bitter. Mm-hmm. Even those that know Christ, mm-hmm. they're bitter because they shouldn't have had to go through that. Mm-hmm. And what those closest to you have done to you requires an accountability. Mm-hmm. I mean, why would you not be very, very angry? Mm-hmm. You don't seem like an angry mm-hmm. person. How have you avoided that? I know the answer, and the answer is the Lord.
Yeah.
But tell us about that. I've already taken most of the 1 minute I said we had left, you address that.
Well, and I'd love to talk more about forgiveness, but, you know, because I had sinned so much, I was such a dark, I felt like years back I was a dark, ugly person. I had slept with hundreds of men. I'd had 2 abortions, and actually I worked part-time for Planned Parenthood. I was their spokesperson. Because God had forgiven me for so much, how could I not take in that forgiveness, grace, and mercy and turn it around to others? So I felt like I needed to go through a process of forgiveness, and God brought me through an incredible, beautiful process of forgiveness. And then it's like, I just want to give away the love that God has given me.
All right, we're going to hear that next time. Okay. And you are a beautiful lady, inside and out. You're just, the Lord has given you a countenance on your face, and that's what you share with these women especially. It's primarily women, isn't it?
Women and now men in treatment centers and prisons and things like that, yes.
Wow.
But if I can attribute any beauty, it would be to the incredible beauty that God just keeps filling me up with. It's like I feel like I'm an endless fountain of love and joy, and I just delight in giving it away.
Well, what we want to do next time is not only to let you tell the story of how you found the Lord and what He did for you, but to offer some help to the people out there who've kept this inside. Mm-hmm. They've never admitted it to anybody. Mm-hmm. They feel guilty. Mm-hmm. They feel dirty, like we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And they need somebody to put an arm around them, at least start the process. And we're going to do that next time.
Amen.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Meeker.
Thank you. Thank you.
Our guest has been Julie Woodley, and thank you for being with us and sharing this again. I asked you in my office how you could continue to go back and relive that in telling your story. Mm-hmm. And you have that countenance about you. And we'll get the answer to that next time.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, it's so hard to stop here, but there's so much more to Julie's story, and I feel like we've only just scratched the surface. I'm Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to a Best of the Best broadcast of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk with our guest, Julie Woodley. This was one of our highest-rated broadcasts of the year, and I urge you to tune in again tomorrow to hear part 2 and learn more about how God is using Julie to help restore people shattered by abuse and trauma and even human trafficking. Julie's story is a beautiful example of God's redeeming love and a reminder that He will do the same for anyone who comes to Him. Maybe you know someone who needs to hear this broadcast, or someone who needs God's healing touch for a wound or a trauma that they've experienced, or maybe you're struggling with a choice that you made in the past or things that were done to you when you were at your most vulnerable. Well, Family Talk wants to help. Call us at 877-732-6825 and let us pray with you and help you find the Christian counselor in your area that will really benefit you. You can also connect with us online at drjamesdobson.org. There you'll also find links to Julie's ministry and many other helpful resources. We're able to offer these resources because of financial gifts from listeners like you. So would you prayerfully consider how you can support us at this time? And right now, whatever you give will be matched dollar for dollar through the end of the year. So please be as generous as you can. And thank you so much for your financial contributions. And don't forget to come back again next time to hear part two of our conversation with Julie Woodley on another Best of the Best edition of Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton for Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Family Talk is the voice you trust for the family you love. Would you join our community right now? More than 4 million people now on our Facebook page. Join the family. Go to drjamesdobson.org.